Have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they don't want it. What seems like bad manners, cynicism, or conceit is always a sign of things no eyes have seen or ears have heard. You don't know what wars are going on down where the spirit meets the bone. But ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That is how the light gets in. Every so often, I look around the sanctuary and I wonder if Jesus were to walk in, how foreign would this place look to Jesus, right? He certainly not understanding the way the pews are and why we're faced this way, a pulpit and lectern. This would not make any sense to Jesus. We could even explain the baptismal font, right? And Jesus would say, why wouldn't you just go down to the river, right? That's how John and I did it, right? We just went down to the river and we had a baptism. You'd look at all the candles and say, why? What's with the candles in here, right? Why do we have that? Probably would listen to some of the music and be like, I don't understand any of this music. The tunes sound off to me, first off. I'm not used to it. And the words, they don't make any sense to me. Yeah, there would be a lot of things that would be foreign to Jesus if he came into our sanctuary this morning. However, there is one symbol he would notice right away. One symbol we lift high and center, which may have, would even bring him to his knees and cause him to weep. If we let ourselves think about it, it's a bit disturbing, isn't it, to make the cross the symbol of our faith. In our sanctuary, around our necks, on my wedding ring, the big cross overlooking Pleasantville Road. After all, the cross was a tool of execution, an innovation of human cruelty meant to cause excruciating pain and suffering. It was meant for public viewings, a display of political power against enemies, used only for the worst, most treasonous rebels who went against the values of the empire. If Jesus walked in, it might be the only symbol he would have actually recognized. It may even trigger him to that moment. My God, why have you forsaken me? Can we just imagine an electric chair or an atomic bomb or a bunker buster as a symbol of faith? That is what Jesus would feel coming into our sanctuary. Now, I want to begin by saying, I get it. Some of us come to church to just hear a message that is positive and kumbaya because we don't need one more space to focus on things that weigh on us. Can we just keep it light, Pastor? Please, this week, can we keep it light? We get the real stuff when we go home, when we get our test results back from our doctor, or when we're dealing with serious family issues, or turn on the news to discover the big headline for the day. Pastor, can we just keep it light for 1 week? I want to say I hear you, because I feel the same way. I'd prefer not to preach sometimes on the heavy stuff. But I think it'd be disingenuous. Our worship takes place under the cross. Out of all the places we go throughout our week, this place, in the presence of God, is a place for truth and honesty. God gives us permission to dump every burden that we are holding, to cry out, really, God, make sense of this for me, please. Are we really supposed to believe you are love and that you are in this? And if so, where? Where are you now? Why aren't you doing more? Psalm 22 is the most well-known psalm of lament. And a lament is a faithful and honest cry to God in which the one lamenting can cut loose, letting God in on every big feeling. Even blaming God and cursing God is on the table. It can be raw anger or utter despair. It is crying one's eyes out until there is nothing left kind of prayer. It is punching the punching bag until your arms are jelly, just hanging at your side kind of prayer. It is screaming so loud that you break your voice kind of prayer. It is a prayer we need to practice, especially in this day, at this moment in history. The psalmist here lifts to God that dogs are all around them, evildoers surround them, and that they are fading away to the point where they can count their own bones. They beg God, they plead with God to step in, to bring salvation, wholeness, anything to help. Lord, do not be far away. Oh, my help, come quickly to my aid. Even though God's presence isn't evident, in faith, do you hear it? They keep asking God. They keep reaching for God. They keep grasping for God to make a move, anything to help. They keep at it. But those kind of prayers and pleads can be exhausting. Whether we're going through it ourselves or we're watching the news, witnessing horrible and malicious crises unfolding around the world, it's exhausting to pray day after day for transgender people and immigrant families when things seem to only be getting worse. It's exhausting to keep praying for the transformation of vindictive pharaohs and Caesars who are bent on hate and power. It's exhausting to pray day after day for God's justice in Gaza, where receiving aid, the necessities of life, results in injury or death, where genocide is unfolding right before our very eyes, and with a stamp of approval from those that represent our voice in the world. It's exhausting, do you feel it, to pray for peace. When just this morning our country entered into war with Iran. Yet as I look out, I see so many of you, and I know the positive change you want to bring into this world. But the weight of this world and all that is wrong can overwhelm us, almost in ways to do absolutely nothing, even to care or to cry out on others' behalf. Lament is not only an important place to begin, but I would say it's crucial for people of faith. In a recent study, Harvard Medical School found that when we cry, our bodies and our minds benefit from that release. It was published that, and I quote, "Crying is an important safety valve, largely because keeping difficult feelings inside, what psychologists call repressive coping, can be bad for our health. Studies have linked repressive coping with a less resilient immune system, cardiovascular disease, and hyperextension, as well as our mental health, including stress, anxiety, and depression. So crying is a really good thing for us. Letting our emotions out is healthy for our bodies and our minds. And in terms of faith, to lament, to cry out to God, not only impacts our body and our mind, but our spirit, our relationship with God. Once it's out, the floodgates are released, and there is a clarity and an awakening, almost like a conversion in a way. Verse 24, the lamenting psalmist has gotten it all out. They put it out on God, and then comes this moment of clarity. saying, God is not ashamed or put off by my prayers. God has not hidden God's face from me, but God has heard when I cried out. And so beginning with lament, the psalmist moves to realize that in the midst of it all is God's solidarity with her. God draws close to her, unafraid, willing to touch the wounds of her heart and soul. And because of that closeness, her trust in God strengthens. In that same Harvard study, they discovered something else that's worth noting here. And it is that when we cry with others, there is an increase in attachment behavior they found that's encouraging closeness, empathy, and support among those we cry with. In other words, when we cry together, when we come together to grieve the loss of somebody, when we get together and we cry against injustice, those tears aren't nothing. But those tears bind us together. They are the glue that keep us united. And I would add, united with God's own heart, who weeps with us and weeps over this world. This week was Juneteenth National Independence Day, the day we celebrate the end of slavery, when on June 19, 1865, Major General Gordon Granger ordered the final enforcement of the Emancipation Proclamation in Texas following the Civil War. You want to know who the first institution was to celebrate Juneteenth? And I kind of already gave it away at the beginning of the sermon. It was the following year in 1866 when churches held the first ever Juneteenth celebration. Now, for many of us, we may not fully realize the significance of this newer holiday, but for people who have great-great-grandparents who were enslaved, treated no better than a farming tool which could be discarded when the job was complete, who traced their ancestry back and it hits dead ends in the 1800s, who endure the trauma that can be passed from generation to generation, this holiday, Juneteenth, is a celebration of life then and how it's been sustained till now. For slaves, those who were bound by hands and feet, who could count their bones, who were surrounded by evildoers selling off children for profit, who did not give up but persevered, who met in the woods in places called hush harbors. Hush harbors were places where slaves would get together with the Bible in one hand and their African spiritualities in their heart. And in their praying and singing and preaching, they would cry out together what they were going through. They cried out against injustice. They cried because the pain hurt and the crucifixion was real. And because they cried together, they found a strength to carry on. They deeply trusted in a God that was moving in liberative ways. And so when Major General Gordon Granger ordered the final enforcement of the Emancipation Proclamation, it was the churches that got down on their knees and praised God, for God did not despise or abhor their affliction of the afflicted. God did not hide God's face, but heard them when they cried. I get it. We may want to come to church for a feel-good sermon, some good music, sorry about that today, to keep it light. We get to the sanctuary doors and we lay down our burden in the narthex, then enter the sanctuary hoping just to pick up the burden on our way back out to the car. But the good news is this: God has taken this cross, that symbol of suffering and oppression, and has resurrected it, transformed it into a symbol of God's steadfast love and faithfulness. The cross is center because God can take everything that we bring, every cry, every word we have to say, and God can hold it with us, be with us, and give us new life again and again, filling our cup, reviving our spirits to carry on, just like those in hush harbors, sustaining the weary and downtrodden. And so our good news for today is that God listens to us. God can hold it, and God can transform it. God will see us through. And for those who believe that, can I hear an amen?
Amen.
God will see us through.